I love the line, there's always going to be another mountain. Anybody ever achieve a dream and a reality and you go, yes, I got to the top. And then you look into the horizon and there's six more mountains. You got to keep going. And I think something that we do that really messes with those of us who are achievers, who are growing and stretching and evolving ourselves, we often fall into the trap that most of the world falls into. It's all about getting to the top of the mountain. It's all about achieving the goal. Yes, I got it. And then I get up there and see the horizon and go, oh my gosh, I'm tired. I don't know if I can do it anymore. It's a symptom of a problem that we have in our culture, that we're missing the climb. We're missing the becoming, the lesson, the learn, the good that happens when every step up the mountain, when it's arduous, when we're tired, when we're worn out, that's where the good happens. That's where the juice happens. That's where the light happens. That's where God happens. That's where we become. Not at the top of the mountain. We've got that a little bit wrong. It's let joy be in every step, an enjoyment for my struggle as well as my wins, an enjoyment for the moments of being tired as well as the moments where I'm celebrating at the top of the mountain, the moments of realization, I got a long way to go, but the realization that says, look how far I've come. That's important. Another thing that we kind of get messed up on the spiritual path a lot is we become so centric on the container of our spirituality. The world is so about arguing and fighting about who has the best container for spirituality. And this time of year becomes that debate. Is Santa Claus or Jesus? I remember I watched South Park. I saw the very first South Park, and it was a battle between Jesus and Santa, and everybody was taken aside. And I went, that's kind of what we become. But it's become larger with our religions. My right, my container is better than your container. My God can beat up your God. And we've lost sight of the substance, that which is in the center of all the containers. Today is about the substance, whether it be Muslim, Jew, pagan, Christian, Santa, or Jesus, that there is an essence. That's what we celebrate. That's what we give birth to. That's what we are about at Unity. Knocking down the walls and making bridges of understanding where we celebrate the substance more than the container. Are you good with that? Every December, two figures come into our memories. They come into our hearts and our spirits, and they warm us. One of them comes born in a stable. The other arrives in a sleigh and down a chimney. One of them comes wearing swaddling clothes, and the other comes wearing a red velvet suit and a hearty laugh. If we listen deeply enough to the two stories, they're not two stories. There's one story, and that's going to be the foundation of what I want to talk about today, to move our mindset from a container to the substance underneath. There's only one story. So before Santa Claus was ever a legend, before Santa Claus was ever a myth, there was a man, and his name was Nicholas. Before Jesus was ever deified and made into a god, there was a man named Jesus. Both brought a consciousness. Both bring a consciousness to the planet. St. Nicholas was born around the year 270 in what is now what we call modern Turkey. He was born into a very rough port city called Myra that was consumed with violence, that was consumed with poverty, that was consumed with injustice and vulnerable people. The man did not become famous because he was preaching sermons. He became known for how he lived. I'm beginning to build a bridge between Jesus and Nicholas. He lived. That's what his sermon was. So many times we get up here and we come on Sunday morning and we hear a sermon and we think that's what we're all about. No, the sermon begins when you leave. The sermon, the life, the good, the Christmas, the Advent, the Hanukkah, whatever it is, ends not here, but begins at the door when you go out and you live your life as such, as an example. He became known for how he gave his inheritance away. He gave his riches away. He protected children. He defended the poor. He showed up at night and he gave anonymously with no need for applause or attaboys so that nobody would feel ashamed. Nobody would feel embarrassed or the least bit indebted. That is agape love. That is agape giving. That is giving for the sake of giving, not giving for the sake of receiving something in return. One night, Nicholas, he secretly tossed bags of gold into the home of three young women, saving them from exploitation and despair. And in that single act, a legend was born. A legend of anonymous generosity. Breathe. A legend of unseen giving without any need for recompense. A legacy of gifts that arrived without condition. Sound familiar? There's a parallel between Jesus and Nicholas. That's not just Santa's behavior. That is Jesus' behavior. That is the Christ behavior that we kindle. That's the candle that we kindle in our own hearts. One of generosity, compassion, of giving and service, of recognizing oneness. Jesus teaches us when you give, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Nicholas practiced it. Jesus says it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. Santa made it a global curriculum. He is an apostle of Jesus. Jesus welcomes children and he says, unless you become like them, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus kneels, honors, listens, pays attention to the impossible questions of children. And he treats imagination like sacred ground. When was the last time we treated our imagination with sacred ground instead of worrying about our containers, fighting about our containers? Let the imagination, one of the 12 powers of mankind, I have to get that in there because I have a Unity minister in the room. When was the last time you cultivated your imagination and let it go wild? How you could make the world a better place. How you could be more kind and generous. Both Jesus and Santa arrive quietly when the world is cold. The world has lost its hope. Hope is very fragile. Neither Jesus or Santa waits for the world to get its act together. And I think there's something to learn from these two containers, these two men. A lot of the people on the planet today, as I see it, are waiting for you to get your act together before I'm kind. I'm waiting for you to get your act together and to change your mind before I will be kind and loving. That's a great cop-out, and that's a quick trip to stagnation, and stagnation is a quick trip to the death of the human race. Jesus is born into oppression, to violence, and uncertainty. Santa Claus, Nicholas, comes in the dead of winter, when the trees are bare, the nights are long. By the way, we celebrate with our pagan brothers and sisters. Today is the darkest night, darkest day of the year, the shortest day of the year. And I think it's a perfect time to have also World Meditation Day. Today we had a wonderful meditation day. Why is it that meditation would fall on the day that is the darkest? Some of the most sacred things we do. What is the first thing we do when we pray and we meditate? We close our eyes. We move to the darkness. Why is that? To remove the distractions. Why is it when we kiss, what's the first thing we do? We close our eyes. Because there's an intimacy that we don't want the distraction. We don't want that to get in the way of the holy moment. The womb where you were born was dark because that's where life happens. The soil where we plant the seed is dark. That's where it happens. And so following the example of these two beings, we on this day must meditate on being the love regardless if anybody deserves it or not. We must be the one who plays Santa Claus, who plays the second coming and the third coming and the fourth coming of kindness and love and oneness and compassion. Not just you go first. If you go first, then I will do it. I know where that road's going to lead. And I'm saying be the first one. Over centuries, the church canonized Nicholas. Culture has reshaped him completely. The Dutch called him Sinterklaas. We Americanized him and called him Santa Claus. Artists gave him a red suit. Poets gave him a bowl full of jelly and a hearty laugh and joy. Children gave him belief. But the soul of the story never changed. Santa Claus is not a distraction to Christ, to Jesus. He is one of Christ's most successful parables. Jesus says, you will do greater things than these. Santa says, hold my beer, let me show you. The container is less important than the substance that lives within. Every time we give without keeping score or asking if somebody deserves it, every time we protect the vulnerable, every time we choose joy as a spiritual practice, every time we believe in the goodness, even when it feels naive, even when it feels hopeless, the Christ is born again and again and again. And Santa and Jesus live on. Today's lesson is a recognition that the spirit of both Jesus, Santa, Santa Claus, the Christ, are in our midst. I had this wonderful idea. We have a number of people in our community that have played Santa Claus, that have allowed their Santa Claus heart to be present for the children of the world and the adults of the world. And I thought, I want to interview them. And I told them, they all wanted to wear their suits. And I said, no, I want to get to know you. I want to get to know the man, the light, the love, and the Christ beneath the outfit. And so I'm going to invite, you probably wondered why this is not for Elijah. But I'd like to invite Glenn Johnson, Richard Croker, and Vic Yankaitis up to these seats as you welcome Santa Claus in the spirit of Santa Claus. You know, all three of them said, come on up, guys, grab a seat. They all said, you're going to give me a mic? And I said, I'm a minister. I can hold my own with a mic. But I'm going to give this mic to one of you. Come on up, Vic. I'll let you guys. What do you got on the back? What does it say? Believe. I love it. And I will say to you all what I said to these three fine friends and fine gentlemen before we were preparing for the service. And I get emotional. I want to be like any one of these men when I grow up. They demonstrate in and out of a suit, with or without a beard, with or without a pack on their back, everything that I just talked about, the kindness and the love. I'm going to ask them some questions, and I said, don't let a question stop you from going where you need to go. And they all said, oh, no problem there. So I'll let you decide who's going to go first. How did you first become Santa Claus, and what called you to it?
I can do this. It's an easy one. It's a short one. My daughter, Amanda, who's here today, called me on the telephone one day and said, our Girl Scout troop is going to have a fundraiser, and you're going to be Santa. Not, would you like to be Santa? Not, would you consider? No, you're going to be Santa. And then a girl crawled up next to me and gave me a hug, and the book was written.
Thanks. I tried to think of when I first became Santa, and it came to me in a backwards way. In a way, I was 17, 1967. I was coming.
Oh, you young Santas, you.
It's the way, hey, I'm sorry. You know, there's. And riding in the bus, I was riding in a bus from an encampment with special kids from New York City, and they were going home in the break. There was going to be a new one, and I got on the bus, and every seat was taken but one. And there was a little guy named Greg Williamson who had braces on his leg. Whether it was cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy. And Greg had an interesting way of speaking as well, because if it were me, you'd say I was addled. He had unique conversational ability, and I sat next to him because nobody else did on this bus ride. And I learned from him what Santa needs, and that's to give somebody complete and undivided attention. And Richard, you might say it with an open heart. I might say it a little different, but
those are good words. That's fine.
Thanks. The attention, and he proceeded to. We had a conversation for about 45 minutes on the ride to New York. And what he taught me while listening was he shared his story. And I think that you guys would probably agree the best thing about being Santa is hearing the stories. So he explained to me his favorite place for some reason every Friday night was to go bowling at the Fulton Fish Market in New York. Made some sense. And so in chatting, he said, can you do me a favor? And he invited me to go bowling with him that night, that Friday night at the Fulton Fish Market in New York. And I know folks talk about different dimensions and whatnot, so I said, sure, I'll come with you. But the topper, the wonderful topper was, he says, we're going on a double date. And I was, okay. And he says, my date is Wilma Flintstone, and yours is Barney Rubble. So the great gift to me was that I got to go bowling at a fish market with my new friend, Gregory Williamson, and Wilma and Betty. And luckily, Fred and Barney didn't show up.
My introduction goes a little further back. I remember when I was 4 years old, my mom took me to the local Buster Brown shoe store first weekend in December, and I'm like, the only time I've ever been in this store was the week before the first day of school. And over in the corner was a gentleman sitting in a chair with an awful beard, an awful wig, and mom says, go tell Santa what you want for Christmas. And I looked at her and said, that's not Santa. But being the obedient son, I went over and I told this gentleman what I wanted for Christmas. And my reality back in the late 50s, early 60s, where mom stayed home to raise the family, dads went to work. The next year, 5 years old now, same Buster Brown shoe store, same gentleman. I could see the elastic behind his ear, the black hair poking out under the beard, asking me what I wanted for Christmas. And the light bulb went off. I told him what I wanted for Christmas last year, and I got it. This guy isn't Santa, obviously, but his job must be to listen to children, and he reports back to Santa. And at that moment, I thought, if he can have that job, one day I want to have that job.
I love it. Each of these gentlemen has shared stories from their experience as Santa Claus, and each of them has cried openly. And I've cried with them. So my next question is, what's the most memorable moment that you've had as Santa Claus? The one that still brings tears to your eyes and a lump to your throat.
I need a minute.
And it's really interesting that this is one of the most common questions that I get when I get to speak to adults, because everybody sees the happy and the good side of it. My goal was to be a mall Santa. To me, that was Santa, the guy in the big, huge display at the local mall. My first year, I did pet visits only because I didn't want to answer questions wrong. Pets don't ask questions. The next year, I actually went to some Santa school so I could educate myself. Second full year, I got to go to a mall. I felt like I had made it. I was in one of the most depressed areas of St. Louis, right outside of Ferguson. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. And children, all types, ones that are eager to come up to you, the ones that go screaming, running away. This mom with two little girls, about 8 years old, the first girl comes right up, tells me what she wants for Christmas. The other girl, who I thought was her sister, held back, and they finally coaxed her to come up. It turned out that it was the other girl's cousin. She sat on my lap, and she said, Santa, I want my mommy back alive and my daddy out of prison. Thank goodness I had gone to a couple of Santa schools before that. I had to pause First off, I told her, you know, there's some things that Santa just can't do. But the one thing I do know is that your mommy lives in your heart. She follows you every day. And the best thing that you can do to honor that is to make her proud of you, just like I'm proud of you.
You follow that.
Okay, thanks. it's unfortunately another mommy story, and it was somewhat similar. This was a young boy who sat on the lap.
A little closer, Vic.
I'm sorry. The young boy who sat on my lap, and he said, as I'm pretty sure you both guys may have been asked to, I'd like a gun for Christmas. And I, come on, you know, okay, my brain's gone. Oh, come on, okay, Santa doesn't give guns for Christmas. It's something Santa doesn't do. So the young fellow was adamant, I really need a gun for Christmas. And I said, you know, Santa just doesn't give out guns. I don't understand why you would need a gun. And he said to me, to keep men from hurting my mommy. And I did not have a good answer like you did. It was one of those flabbergasting moments where I had no way to answer. And I don't know if in the Santa schools if you become a mandated reporter. So it was another case of what is it that I do with this information? And honestly, you know, I don't have an answer. There's not a happy ending. It is one of those little things that's been in my consciousness forever. You know, is this one of those rare times where Santa should have interfered or did something extra besides sit on the chair? And if it was a lack in me or a lack in ability or the situation, unfortunately, that was literally the end of it. There was nowhere else to go with it. And I'm sorry if this is a downer.
All right, I've come up. It didn't make me cry at the time, but it does now. And it happened in this church. Somebody had a wild idea. They wanted me to be Santa Claus for Kidsmas. They flew me in on a helicopter. The music he was playing in the helicopter was Santa Is Coming in a Whirligig, sung by Gene Autry. Anyway, I came in and sat down, and I did the amateur Santa thing. What do you want for Christmas? You know, and where have you been good? I've kind of dumped out on that have you been good thing a little bit. We'll get to that hopefully a little bit later. But what happened was a little bit later. When my daughter brought my six-month-old grandson to sit in my lap just for a picture, everybody else had gone, but and we took that picture, and it was one of my most prized possessions. So, Aiden Richard, I love you.
So let's drop this down a little bit to a more spiritual nature. We talk about the Christ light here at Unity all the time. That divine spark, it was in the beautiful meditation. It was in the prayer, the light that is in, around, and through all creation and all people. What connection do you see between Santa's spirit and that Christ spirit?
You're looking at me first. Thanks a lot. Oh, goodness gracious, yes. This may be a little heavy, and I apologize if one of the least joyful times I was Santa was the December before COVID hit really bad. And it wasn't as much fun as usual because the kids I was doing it for were refugee kids, and I knew them. I volunteered at an after-school program for refugee kids. And one of the reasons that it wasn't the most fun thing was there was a gift and a name in the bag for Santa to give out. So it would be like, hi, I see that you wanted this doll, or hi, I see that you wanted this pack of Pokemon cards. And I gave it to them, and they were happy to receive it. And, you know, it was giving, and that was really nice, but there was no extra, you guys know what I mean. You know, there's no extra pizzazz, no extra communication. And I remember, like, taking that into the December of the year before COVID. I think it was 2020, 2019 it might be. The memory gets a little foggy as the beards get whiter. I had either a vision or a dream, and these are not the kind of things the people that know me a little bit know. I don't talk about this kind of stuff. And the dream was a very simple one. I was walking in the suit, in the uniform, and it was light, but in the night, it wasn't a full moon, it was light, and I walked, and there was, hate's not the right word, I'm amazed that I'm saying this, there was a cradle. There was no Joseph, there was no Mary, there were no shepherds, there were no animals, there was just this baby in a manger. And the way the dreams work, there I am, I walk up, and I just sit down next to the manger, and I pick this baby up, and I hold it for a second. And the realization came to me that Santa season ends December 25th, thereabouts. And I had this sense of knowing who this was, and knowing that he knew the future, because he does. And that every year, come December 25th, the future changes again. So the story for him, I don't know for me, but for him, was going to be different in this new go-round. And I just held the baby and rocked. And I don't know where to go with this. I'm sorry, but it was just for a moment. Just sit there and hold that baby and rock.
Just a quick parallel to the job of minister. I've learned my words get in the way. Holding somebody, you need to be held, sometimes is the greatest gift of all. Who's next?
I'd like to introduce something a little different. You've noticed I've had my cell phone in my hand. I tried to memorize this last night, but I don't trust myself. And by the way, this is my brand new iPhone, and it's like an old man trying to learn a new language. So... But Richard Burdick, you know Richard Burdick, he sang this song once. I wish he'd sing it again. It's from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, written by Anthony Newley. And it's called, what's it called, Richard?
Imagination.
Imagination. And here's one verse from it. I'm not going to sing it, don't worry. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Whatever you want to do, do it. Do you want to change the world? There's nothing to it. And the message I want to bring to you guys today, and maybe irrelevant to the question, is this, that this message doesn't need to be limited to a Christian church. I have brought Buddhism into it just a little bit because I'm reluctant with the naughty and nice thing. I spent almost 20 years in that house that used to be there, telling teenagers about non-judgment. So I was like, oh, naughty and nice is kind of judgmental, isn't it? Just a little bit. And I have worked this in with my grandchildren. My granddaughter goes to school every day. She is a freshman at Walton High School. I will send her a text message every day that says something along the lines of, just be kind. Just be kind. I have worked that in, not completely in lieu of don't be naughty or nice, or just be good. I will say to them, finger up. Santa, that's hard for Santa to do. It's finger up. Just be kind. Find somebody who is sad and give them a hug. Just be kind. And a couple of nights ago, I had a session. My wife and daughter were there, and we both, whenever I did that, would look at the father, and the father would go like that. So my message to you from Santa.
Just be kind.
Could you ask the question again?
Sure.
Sorry.
The parallel between the Christ within and Santa's spirit.
Okay, thank you. First off, every day I start with a little prayer of gratitude that I get to do this. I see literally hundreds, if not thousands, of children every year. Something that I carry through the year, it's easy when we've got the suit on. But I remember back in the 90s, it was real popular, the kid wore bracelets that had WWJD on them. What would Jesus do? And I find myself constantly asking myself, what would Santa do? And I make the majority of my decisions with that foremost in my thought, what would Santa do in this situation? And what I found, it's exactly what Jesus would do. So it's an easier step for me to live like Santa, because living like Jesus seems like such a stretch, but it puts me in the right direction.
I believe I've asked the question, what would Glenn do? What would Richard do? What would Vic do? Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't, because I know I'd get in trouble. So two more questions and then we're going to wind this up. If you could whisper one message from the heart, your heart, from Santa's heart to every child, no matter their age, every child or adult in this world this Christmas, what would that message be?
Just be kind.
My message is you have to create your dream before you can realize it. It's not good enough just to hope for something. You have to visualize what it is you're hoping for.
Sounds like the first Sunday of Advent.
Sounds like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Mine would be thank you. I had the great pleasure yesterday of passing out socks. I get to help feed homeless once a month. It's on the third Saturday. One of the interesting things about doing it on the third Saturday of every month is most years, the third Saturday in December falls just before Christmas. So this year, somebody gave me 1,500 pairs of socks to pass out as many as I could to the homeless. And I suspect that if I look around the room here, quite a few of you folks are the folks that provided the socks. When I opened the box, I was expecting 1,500 pairs of Costco white socks that were going to keep people's feet warm. Lo and behold, there were green socks, white socks, rainbow socks, women's socks, slippers, Nikes, Adidas, etc., and just a couple of small stories to say thank you to your folks, because it made a huge difference. It put smiles on people's faces, and some of the responses were not things that you would expect. My daughter helped by putting out a table, and she put socks in the right order. She put socks by color. She put socks by size. She put socks with dogs on it. Somebody gave socks with Pokemon Z or Dragon Ball Z. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly which one. And she engaged people, and she is not somebody who engages people out of the goodness of her heart all the time. And she engaged people, and a gentleman comes up, and she says, what size socks do you need? And he said, six. A male size six, and the person behind him said, you're short. And she, my daughter says, yeah, it's okay. Do you want the black socks or the green socks? And the fellow behind him said, if you take the green socks, you're going to look like a black leprechaun. So he was hesitant, and she said, be bold. And the gentleman took the green socks. I went out, and I know some of these folks from, in some ways, unfortunately, that I have seen them for over years, that they came to be fed, and they're still whatever word you want to use, unhoused or homeless. The weird thing about this is you're not always glad to see them because that means they still are. But you are glad to see them. And one of the friends that I knew, I came to him and with the little basket with socks and candy canes and said, "Hey, would you like a pair of socks? I got a nice black pair of socks here, and I got a pair of rainbow socks here." And he looks at me and he says, "I don't take no rainbow socks. I ain't no effing faggot." Not everything, obviously, you want to hear comes out the way it was. Well, the gentleman next to him says, "I'll take the rainbow socks because he's been sleeping with me in my tent for the last 5 months." And the third story, and I'll get it out quick, was a woman says, "Santa, can I take my picture with you?" And so I said, "Sure." And she too had a new Apple phone, and she could not figure out how to have the picture taken with Santa. So somebody realized that she had the black cover over it entirely. And so she took it out, and she realized she had like only 12% phone power left. So she said, "Can I take a video with you, Santa?" And I said, "Sure." She said, "Can you say Merry Christmas to my granddaughters?" And I believe their names were Doreen and Jalen. That may not be accurate, but it's as close as I've got right now. And so we took the picture, and I said, "Happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, Jalen, Doreen." And she says, "Girls, Santa's coming with me. We are going to share these socks with you on Christmas morning if your mom lets me in the door." So, folks, if everything goes perfect, your gifts, I'm going to make a dad joke here just for you, my friend, heels for heels and souls for souls, and maybe on Christmas morning, if everything goes right, there'll be a short black guy saying, "Merry Christmas and top of the morning to you." There will be two people in a tent playing footsies. And maybe there will be a mom, a grandmom, and two younger girls, daughters, grandchildren, opening their own socks that are hung by the fireplace with care.
I'm going to give you we have just a little, one more question, and it's be short. How might we, every one of us, this is a sermon, this is the part of the sermon today, keep Santa's spirit alive beyond December as a daily spiritual practice of what we teach from this platform, what you teach every time a child's sitting on your lap? How might we keep that spirit alive?
Just be kind.
Of all your questions, this was the hardest one, because it's easy on our religious days, Easter, Christmas, that seems, and other religions have their holy days, their holidays, if you will. It's very easy to forget the outside and come within. And there's a song that says, "What if every day could be just like Christmas?" And I wonder the same thing. I don't have an answer for that. How do we do it? I don't know. All I know is that from the middle of October through Christmas Day, I do whatever I can to let people forget about all of this stuff and worry about this stuff. And if they get comfortable doing it a little bit, maybe they can take it away after Christmas and practice a little more. And that's what I love about Unity, and specifically UNA here, that we're encouraged to take our message to the community. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that in the capacity that I do.
Really short, looking in down this row, I see somebody with hearing aids. I see somebody with hearing aids. I see somebody with hearing aids.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes. Okay, wait a minute. One more time. I want to give you the bump up. I missed it. I'm sorry. Yeah, and the answer is, listen.
You know, we started this message today with realizing that we as a culture, as a humanity, have gotten so concerned about the destination, about where we're going, and our eye is on the ball, which is an important part of our spiritual practice. These three men, in and out of their character, let every step be filled with joy, with kindness, with listening, with compassion. That's what Christmas is about. And it matters very little the container that you're celebrating these qualities. Love is love. Kindness is kindness. Compassion is compassion. So that's my answer. Let Christmas live in you. Let the divine ideas live in you on the 26th of December, on January 2nd, as much as they do on the 25th and the 1st.
Very quickly, lots of good goes on in this room and in rooms like it all over the country. But the real way to change the world for the better is happening down there in kids' church, where they first learned just be kind.
Do me a favor, will you thank these Richard Croker, Glenn Johnson, Vic Yankaitis. And we wouldn't be complete until they all at the same time gave us a hearty ho, ho, ho. One, two, three.
Ho, ho, ho!